You know how sometimes you fall in love with a movie so much you watch it over and over again? Well, some movie fans take that devotion to a whole other level. For instance, remember The Shining? Stanley Kubrick's creepy movie about a writer and his family in a haunted hotel. There are ghosts and rivers of blood, and then Jack Nicholson tries to kill everyone. That's pretty scary. Well, it turns out there are some super fans who have watched The Shining 20 or 30 times, even frame by frame, and they found what they believe are secret clues, messages that Kubrick hid in the film. And now there's a movie about those obsessed fans. It's called Room 237, made by director Rodney Asher. New York Times film critic Manola Dargis thinks it's kind of creepy and kind of fascinating.
He talks to five different movie fans, all of whom have kind of far-out ideas about the movie. It's a documentary, I would say, only in quotation marks, in the sense that they're making all of this up with this material that they've watched. It's like we are so deep in movie land that inside the movie that we're watching, Room 237, we never have a cutaway to some person like Jeffrey Cox, who's one of the people who has a very wild interpretation of the movie. You never cut away to see him speaking in, let's say, his living room. You know, there's no talking headshot of him sitting in an office in the real world. So for me, it's a kind of acknowledgement that the movie and everything that we're listening to, it has no reference in the real world. Hmm.
And since I'm trained as an historian and my special expertise is in the history of Germany and Nazi Germany in particular, I became more and more convinced that there is in this film a deeply laid subtext that takes on the Holocaust. I think it probably was the typewriter, which was a German brand, which might seem arbitrary, but by that time I knew enough about Kubrick that most anything in his films can't be regarded as arbitrary. And so that struck me, why a German typewriter?
He thinks this is a reference to the German bureaucratic killing machine, or what else? The number 42 keeps showing up on sweatshirts. Or, he actually counted the number of times Jack's wife, Wendy, swings the bat at Jack Nicholson. And it's 42 times, which he thinks is a reference to 1942.
Yes, the film historian David Bordwell has a really useful term that I like. He says that one of the things that critics do is that they create model films. And what they basically are doing is they're reconstructing the movie, making a mental model of the movie. But it's a very selective model, because what they do is they emphasize certain details and de-emphasize others or just ignore other things. And so I think that of all of the different people who speak inside of Room 237, that Jeffrey Cox has the best and most plausible model film. And, you know, if you think about a little model ship, he's made a model film of The Shining, a kind of a separate film that he has constructed from all of the cues and the patterns that he has picked out in the movie. But what that means is that he's ignoring a lot of the other stuff in the movie. And I think that's a really interesting thing because, as I wrote, this is kind of movie criticism at its most delirious. And for me, it's kind of interpretation gone wild, you know, or criticism gone wild. You see something in a movie and you latch on to something that speaks to you personally, and then you kind of siphon all of that material and you go back with all of that material and you start making a secondary, a shadow movie, a model movie that based on all of that material that's interesting to you. But in order to do that, you have to ignore a lot of other things. What's astonishing to me is how deep people go. There's an entire interpretation about the moon landing.
The carpeting on the floor during the famous Danny scene where he stands up with his Apollo 11 shirt, the patterns in the carpeting exactly match Launchpad 39A, you know, even the driveway and everything. And if you notice in that shot, the pattern on the rug changes when Danny stands up.
One of the reasons I wanted to go back to The Shining is like, wait a minute, does the pattern on the rug really change? It really does. So, you know, when I see something like that in a movie, my default position is usually that's just a mistake.
Right, don't you just think continuity mistake?
Exactly. That's a blooper. That's something that's going to show up on one of those internet websites. I don't then, therefore, decide that it's a portal into an entire world of meaning.
Well, one of the things that I think is so interesting about listening to these different interpretations is my take on it was, well, this is kind of weird, like a weirdly twisted version of what we all learn to do in college English classes, right?
Yes.
You're taught to read novels deeply and to look for images and symbols and to think about linking those up. Nobody ever suggested that the novelist did it on purpose. In some cases, novelists, of course, are conscious of the way they're using symbols and images, but the assumption always is that there's a great deal that we do when we're creating something imaginary that we're not fully aware of, and that's the delight of interpretation. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think of that in terms of this film?
I think this is taking the intentionality to a point of madness almost. No, I don't mean madness like, I mean it in a very playful way. There's nothing bad really about these interpretations. I think they're faulty. I think they're kind of silly at times. I think they're foolish. No harm was done. It's fine. What I think it's interesting is movies teach us how to watch them to a certain extent. There are all sorts of ways in which they cheat time and space. And we learn just by watching movies how to read them through editing, for instance. A lot of movies won't show you someone walking up to a door, opening the door, walking through the door, closing the door. You'll just have a cut from someone in the hallway to suddenly they're in the room. And what we do is that we understand that that person has gone through the door. Mm-hmm. Movies, they cheat that because they only often have 2 hours, if we're lucky, mm-hmm. to make their meaning. So they're compressing time and space. So there's a lot of cheating, and we learn how to do that. What's interesting is that for some viewers, it's not enough what the movie is telling us. And I think that that's really important. The movies tell us a lot of things. There's a lot happening on screen. And I think one of the problems with just mainstream criticism often is that we're not looking at what is there, the visible evidence, as it were. We're not just paying attention to what's on screen. We're looking kind of casually at the movies and then just running off. And some of this is understandable. I mean, most movie critics are still just watching a movie, let's say, just once. You know, unlike these fans in Room 237, you know, when I review a movie, I'm usually going to a screening room. I watch the movie once, and then I have to go home and I have to create my mental model of the movie. I have to summon it up, look at my little chicken scratch notes, mm-hmm. and try to remember what in the world was I writing in the dark, and imagine it. But I'm trying to understand what I saw. I'm trying not to take these great imaginative leaps because I think that we do a disservice sometimes to the movie. And so while I find these interpretations amusing, I think particularly because I am a movie critic, I also find myself frustrated when I see other people doing that when they're writing about a movie. What this movie really is about, quotations around really is about. We saw that recently with Gone Girl, people not just looking at Gone Girl as for what it is, but saying what it really is about.
And on the other hand, there's something kind of beautiful about the way these fans, the attention that they bring to the smallest details and the smallest images in the film. One of these fans is ABC News correspondent Bill Blakemore, and he reads The Shining as mainly about the Native American genocide. And one of his big pieces of evidence is that there's a Calumet baking powder can.
And I think my visual imagination looked at that Calumet baking powder can, the one right behind Halloran's head when he's talking to Danny. I knew what Calumet meant. It meant peace pipe. And I thought to myself, peace pipe, Indians. Oh my goodness, they're all over the place in that movie.
I would never have even noticed that baking powder can or the fact that later you see even more baking powder cans. And I kind of like having noticed that.
Oh, I think it's great. I only get irritated, I think, with other professionals when they take these kind of leaps sometimes. What I'm saying is when they're not actually paying attention to what's on screen. I think why I did love this movie, Room 237, and why I think of it as delirious is the playfulness. And it is, I agree, I think there's something quite beautiful. I love that they're looking at the details. I think fundamentally it says more about Bill Blakemore than it does about Kubrick, I would argue. I don't actually think that it's about the genocide. The kind of confidence with which he puts forth this interpretation is really quite a lovely thing. But I think it's because I think fan love, unless it's demented, is quite lovely oftentimes. And there's something about Kubrick that just brings out this kind of devotion, I think, as a testimony to Kubrick himself.
Manola Dargis is co-chief film critic for the New York Times. The film is Room 237, just out on DVD. And if you want to watch it, Manola actually suggests a triple feature. Watch The Shining, then Room 237, then watch The Shining again, just not before bed.